Welcome to the Dietitian Rehab Podcast, where we not only challenge and inspire dietitians to think outside the traditional dogmatic education, training, and attitudes for a mind wide open, but also to challenge anyone to think differently about their own health. We'll talk all things food, health, and nutrition related as we explore points of view, evidence, and strategies for better health that will allow you a fuller understanding of the hot topics that everybody's talking and asking about. Hi friends, welcome to the show today. I'm your host, Doug Cook. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Barry Tan, who is hailed as a trailblazer and the world's foremost expert on vitamin E. A scientist first and foremost, Dr. Tan earned his PhD in chemistry and biochemistry from the University of Otago in New Zealand and spent several years as a professor at the University of Massachusetts. Dr. Tan is credited with discovering a form of vitamin E called tocotrienol from three major sources, palm, rice, and annatto. Dr. Tan is currently the president of American River Nutrition, a natural health R&D company he started with his wife, Elizabeth, in 1998. Today, his research focuses on lipid-soluble nutrients that help to reduce and slow chronic health conditions. And just a note, if you're listening to this episode through one of the directories where the podcast is found, like iTunes, et cetera, be sure to check out my website, dougcookrd.com, specifically for this episode, as there is a ton of great research papers and other supporting documents on tocotrienols, which helps clear the confusion around vitamin E. So without further hesitation, let's get to the show. Welcome to the show, Dr. Tan. I'm really, really thrilled to have you here. And I know this is going to be a hugely interesting topic for people of all walks of life, both my peers, dietitians, nutritionists, but other medical professionals who listen and the public as well, because vitamin E has been a confusing topic. So I know you're going to clear away all that and leave us really enriched. So I'm wondering if we could just start off with a few questions and we'll go from there. So maybe to provide a little bit of background and context. I'm wondering if you could tell us about your interest, when it started, your interest in tocotrienols.
Wow. Well, thank you, Doug, for having me on. So I'm grateful. So I hope that this will be enlightening to your audience. It is my favorite topic. Mm-hmm. I started my career as a University of Massachusetts professor in the early 80s, and I'm still living in this Amherst-Hadley area, 2 hours inland from Boston, probably about 8 hours south of Toronto, like that. And it was during that time when I was doing research on vegetable oil. Oil material is where vitamin E are typically found. And originally my country was Malaysia, and they are processing a lot of palm oil. I'm not touching on the subject of palm oil, saturated fat. The audience know a fair bit about that. But I was studying the antioxidant in palm oil. And when I remove all the vegetable oil and remove the carotene, then I found out that, oh, there's this tiny 0.1% of something left there that's not the vegetable oil, not the carotene. So I got curious. I emailed them back and let them know. And then they said, oh, it's vitamin E. So, and then I did more work. And I just suspect that it wasn't exactly that. And then found out that 25% of that 0.1% is vitamin E, very small amount. But the remaining 75% of those are not exactly vitamin E. So that started my career to look at this lesser known vitamin E called tocotrienol that have really characterized my last 35 years. And that was it. So that's how I got into this new field of vitamin E.
So that's amazing. So it's amazing if you didn't notice that little leftover residue, we may not be here today talking about all this amazing science.
Yeah.
So kudos for you for being so inquisitive. And so for people who don't know, and is going to be a lot, we talk about tocotrienols. I know what they are, but can you just help people understand what vitamin E is? It's not a single entity. And maybe just give us, as they say, the overview of that.
Yes, it is 8 different chemicals, or we call it 8 different isomers. It may sound a lot, but in life, plants are so large and can make so many things. If you talk about antioxidant, polyphenols, there are several thousands of them, and carotenes, at least 700. So in that perspective, vitamin E containing 8 molecules are not so big. But of the 8 molecules, there are 2 groups, tocopherols, which is what you find on your cereal box, how you take every morning, how many IU or milligram of tocopherols, and the lesser known one, tocotrienols. Both of them are mouthful of a word. The trienol on the last phrase there, it just means tri 3 in double bonds. So there are 3 double bonds in the tail. And then, so a tocopherol then is considered saturated vitamin E. A tocotrienol is unsaturated vitamin E. So it's a way to distinguish them. Both of them has a phenolic ring, which means that they're antioxidant. Most of your audience would know that vitamin E is an antioxidant. And I focus for the last 30-something years on the tocotrienol. And truth be told, the tocotrienol were really discovered 40 years or 50 years after the discovery of tocopherol. And this is very auspicious time, so to speak. The 2 pediatricians that discovered vitamin E almost 100 years ago. So we're hoping to do the 3rd international symposium in 2022, because the discovery of vitamin E was in 1922 with 2 pediatricians from UC Berkeley. And only in the 1960s, the tocotrienol were discovered. And then 20 years later, I started my career at University of Massachusetts and since have been studying it. So in short, plant makes tocopherols and tocotrienol, rarely tocotrienol, mainly tocopherol to protect the vegetable oil is good enough. But in rare instances, when the plant needed to protect something very dramatic that can get highly oxidized in the plant, then they start to make tocotrienol and not tocopherol.
Okay, so just to summarize, their vitamin E is not one single nutrient or one single isomer, which is a fancy word to refer to a chemical structure, a molecule structure. There's 2 main categories, so tocopherols, tocotrienols, and within each of those, there's 4, right? Alpha, beta, delta, gamma. So one way to make people might think about it is like they're 8 cousins or siblings or something like that, right? So they're similar, but they're different enough. And the predominant ones are tocopherols. Not that that makes it better because it's predominant. So what I have found interesting in the history of nutrition is history. So I just said the history of nutrition, but when you look at the historical context of things, that really influences orthodoxy, common knowledge, and assumptions. So vitamin E, alpha tocopherol, was discovered and back in 1922, and it did one specific thing of interest, which maybe you can elaborate on as it relates to fertility. And then that dominated everything, and we kind of forgot all the other stuff. Is that right?
That is correct. I think that when you think, yes, it was discovered and named a vitamin because it's able to bring the fetus to full term. And for that reason alone, I would say tocopherol and tocotrienol became a vitamin. It's a unique status. Very few chemicals on earth are ever vitamin. Of course, to this day, no human being have ever been shown that the lack of vitamin E caused the fetus to abort, spontaneously abort. We have not seen that. In animals we have, there may be some marginal and sadly Bangladeshi women that they study very low status of vitamin E and they have very high spontaneous abortion rate. I saw this study. Can you imagine that? Almost 100 years later, and that still could be true, historically could be accurate, but to a Western society like we are living in, that has not been documented. Perhaps, people argue, it's not been documented because if she has very low vitamin E status and she was spontaneously aborted with a heavy flow of blood, then it's history, and then both of them would try again, or probably something like that. So nothing has been pursued on it more. However, what followed from the discovery was very soon after, almost like 10 years after 1932, they begin to notice that this tocopherol have very strong antioxidant property. So they did find that out. And that colored it because they're able to document, hey, it protects the fat, it protects the meat, and then it protects people, the animals under stress, this and another thing. So that have dominated the whole field. Now, if you fast forward that in the 1930s, all the way to the 1980s, a lot of clinical trials were done on antioxidant, cardiovascular benefit, this, that, and other thing, cancer. But you know, if somebody Google on vitamin E, I don't want to set them misguided. If you Google vitamin E, almost certain you're going to find negative thing that clinical trials fail. So your audience need to know that, yes, the clinical trial failed, I'm with it. The clinical trial fails because they only use alpha-tocopherol because the game was to put in alpha-tocopherol. Actually, there was a misplaced isomer, but that was all this the large company were making. And then I got into the testing. I was interested in science. I wasn't interested in commerce or anything like that. Then I said, wow, why is everybody putting all the efforts in alpha-tocopherol? And now this little known tocotrienol show up. And so today, the last 30-something years, well, the alpha-tocopherol thing peaked, and then in the 1990s, it just colossal dropped. And then I was in that part that to study the tocotrienol, and then systematically, we study on chronic conditions. I know you're going to ask me questions like that. Chronic conditions, we systematically see that a beneficial, that is a property that is unshared by tocopherol.
Yeah, so just people understand, tocopherol was discovered. It had some neat properties. I looked at antioxidant features of it, and they just ran with it and said, hey, let's see if it does A, B, C, D, or benefits A, B, C, D. And it kind of just, we kind of went down the rabbit hole, as we say there. So I guess just to kind of move on, and I'm just wondering if you could just help differentiate for people's minds the slight differences. I know you said that it looks like a tadpole. I know you've used that reference before. The molecules look like a tadpole. It's got a head, which is a round ring, and a tail. And structurally, the difference between tocotrienols and tocopherols is in the size of this tail, which helps them behave differently. Could you expand on that?
Yes. Actually, some of these studies were done by a Canadian group. One of them is at Brock University, which is not very far from Toronto, and other people in Europe and the US too. So it's not my study, but I connect all of these studies together. And I think of it, the tadpole idea this way. The head of a tocopherol is bigger. The head of a tocotrienol is smaller. So the head is able to bend and capture oxygen radical faster. One. The tail of a tocopherol is longer because it's saturated. And the tail of a tocotrienol is a shorter. So think of, it's a metaphor in the US, a policeman is only in a take care of a town or a city. Mm-hmm. A state trooper in the US, they would go around the whole state, and the FBI would be the whole country. I think of just the state itself, province, I suppose, in Canada. So a tocopherol anchors deeply into the phospholipid, into the cell wall. So they move, but very slowly around the cell. A tocotrienol have a shorter tail, anchors less deeply, and it flies around the cell. This research work was done in UC Berkeley about 50 years ago. And 40 years ago, they clearly show that the tocotrienol flies around the whole cell about 50 times faster than a tocotrienol. Actually, it's for that reason that it can capture free radical faster, not because it's more powerful, this, that, and other thing. Because normally if somebody tell you something and said it's 50 times more potent, as a scientist and a human being, I find that not easily acceptable. So that's why Professor Lester Packer figured out why is it 50 times faster. It's simply they actually have electron spin resonance, and they saw the tocotrienol spin around the phospholipid 50 times faster. I was astounded when I read his study.
Okay, so that's a really good, important point. So if people can't remember their high school biology, a cell membrane, an image that comes to mind right now is if I think of a sandwich, we've got two slices of bread, which is kind of the outer surfaces of a cell membrane, and then we've got the filling, so people can picture peanut butter and jelly. So where the tocopherols are hanging out and the tocotrienols is in the peanut butter and jelly filling, because that's where the fatty part is. And they are swimming around like little tadpoles. That might help people envision it better. And the tocotrienols are like sprinting around and cleaning up all the bad stuff. And that's why they're more effective. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That is an excellent description to help people to capture. The only part that is missing that I forgot to say earlier would be this. And this is a very good perspective. And not a lot of people focus on this. You can Google and find it out. To every human person, approximately 60 to 80 kg. Are contained by about 38 trillion cells. What then? Now that's a huge number. 38 trillion is approximately 5,000 times the population of the world. So that helps us to understand a little bit. All of these 38 trillion cells have a cell wall. Otherwise, the content in the cell will disembowel. You can't have like that. So, and the cell wall are lipid material. Now, a lot of things has been pushed out there to say everything antioxidant is a good thing. No problem with that. I care the most. We have three major food groups, protein, fat, and carb, and they all can get oxidized. But I care for the most. Now, this is a critical one. I care for the most about fat because fat is the easiest and the lowest line food to be oxidized. If you don't believe me, you stick a hunk of butter on a summer day, you will smell the off flavor. If there's a roadkill, the first smell you smell are rotten fat before it gets to the protein. And then meat that go bad, even seafood that go bad, they are fat that get oxidized. So therefore, when I say the word antioxidant, I'm particularly care for the antioxidant that protect the fat. Now that I took 1 minute to explain that to you, I got to go further. I care for the antioxidant that can protect the lipids because it's the first to go bad before it go after the DNA. And of all the antioxidant in the cell wall, 90% of the antioxidant are vitamin E molecule. The remaining 10% is a gazillion other description of antioxidant. That is to say, vitamin E molecule is a perfectly snug into the phospholipid, not other antioxidant. The famous one, including CoQ10, lycopene, astaxanthin, there are many, many, but they don't land in the cell wall. Vitamin E molecules do. And now I describe to you the two tocopherol and tocotrienol, and tocotrienol can do 50 times faster. I'm hoping from now until the end of my career to document the tocotrienol have a unique place in the human body to protect the cell wall from oxidative damage.
Yeah, and so people might not understand these fatty acids, these lipids, they're everywhere. They're red blood cells, muscle cells, neurons, or brain cells. So protecting those fats from oxidation is going to maintain their function and health throughout life. So that's an important takeaway for everybody. And so these are different, these tocotrienols are different than what people find typically in vitamin E supplements. Mm-hmm. And I'm boggled that manufacturers are still making them. So, and I guess it might be a waste of time to even talk about vitamin E because vitamin E, what I mean is alpha tocopherol, because we've determined that it's not ideal, but the companies still put alpha tocopherol and there's two forms, there's natural and synthetic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you want to comment on this, but I read somewhere that synthetic alpha tocopherol is derived from some kind of chemical process from petroleum. Mm-hmm. And during the formation of synthetic alpha tocopherol, these other isomers are formed, mm-hmm. which are not found in nature. So when you take a synthetic form of vitamin E, alpha tocopherol, you're getting all this other stuff, which sounds not good. I don't know if you have a comment on that or if I'm way off on that.
No. You, now that you brought that up, two things. One, when people use petrochemical base to make alpha tocopherol, they cannot control how the alpha tocopherol is made. Alpha tocopherol it is, but they can't control it. So then there's a permutation spatial arrangement of the molecule. So they're essentially making 8 different molecules of alpha tocopherol. It boggles my mind. The plant never make 8 molecules of alpha tocopherol, just one. So, but you synthetically make it using petrochemical, the 8, which means, in a simplistic term, 87.5% of alpha tocopherol made is counterfeit tocopherol.
Oh,
that's one simple statement. So, however, from the plant, you have alpha tocopherol, only 1 of the 8, not the other 7. That's the first statement. Now, then I want to go away from alpha tocopherol, because in the last 30 years or so, most of the indication that mitigate chronic condition in human health are the tocotrienol, not the alpha tocopherol. And if you go to a store to buy vitamin E, almost 95% of the time they are tocopherol. So you have to screen to look for the vitamin E that is tocotrienol. And then the tocotrienol, now, okay, there are only 3 sources. Now I'm sipping it down for you. There are only 3 natural sources of tocotrienol: from rice, from palm, and from annatto. In my 35 years, I discovered all these 3 of them. And then why did I not stay with rice? There's a reason. Half of rice tocotrienol is tocopherol. So I'm bothered. I'm not bothered because rice make it, but then if I want to intervene human disease, I can't do it. For the rice, yeah, the rice is not doing, or the palm, or the annatto, they're not doing this for me. You see, we are so self-centered. They're doing it to protect themselves. It's adequate. Then I discovered it from palm. Palm is 25% tocopherol. So it's good for the palm, but not good enough for me because there's still tocopherol there. Until about 25 years ago, I discovered it's from annatto. Annatto is the red color we put in the coloring of cheese and meat. So when I found it, I was like, oh my God, this is entirely tocotrienol, free of tocopherol. And then I thought, okay, if all the previous 20 years I've done on it, I remember distinctively talking to a professor. He told me, he said, Barry, if tocotrienol were to ever mitigate human diseases, you better stick your life to study this for the next whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I did. So therefore, I gamble on this, you know, in life also, even in science, you gamble. I don't know if I do something is going to pan out, you know. But of course, now hindsight is 20/20. But then I thought, you know, it's a new molecule. Everybody is putting on tocopherol. And I didn't do that. I appreciate the fact that you are a rebel. You want to look something new on dietitian thing. I was only in a rebel in a sense that I want to do new science. But I wasn't in a rebel to know somehow, fictitiously, miraculously, tocotrienol would work better. I didn't know that. I just know that this deserved to be studied. And then I studied, and systematically, I found out when I ever compare with tocopherol, tocotrienol is head and shoulder above. We did that. And then we also did this very unusual thing. Most people don't do this kind of study. You have tocopherol as a group, you have tocotrienol as a group, and then this thing does 3 times better or 5 times better. That's one kind of study. Then there's another kind of study, a little bit more complex. You have tocopherol group, you have tocotrienol group, and then you have a tocotrienol group where you add back the tocopherol. Now, once you do this, we found that the tocotrienol function is suppressed. So that is to say, the addition of tocopherol to tocotrienol, it interferes with the function. So that is to underscore the idea that not every time when you find a mixture in nature, they are necessarily synergistic. Most of the time they are. But you know, for any thinking person, if the word synergism exists, the possibility of antagonism also can exist. So we cannot make the a priori assumption is always synergistic. Actually, most time they are. So I'm happy to say that. But we're troubled. The alpha tocopherol simply prevent the tocotrienol from absorption because it has a transport protein.
Okay, so that's really important because I know nowadays a lot of supplement companies are making what they call a full spectrum vitamin E. So they have all four tocopherols, all four tocotrienols. Mm-hmm. Now, typically they have higher amounts of alpha tocopherol. And so the solution, when people might say, well, just add tocopherols to a typical vitamin E supplement, is that you're saying the alpha tocopherol will depress, minimize, impair to some degree the absorption of the tocotrienols, which is not good. And so is, like, I know all fats go into the lymph system and then to the liver and into the circulation. Doesn't matter if you're eating cheese or fish or whatever. So when tocopherols, are they both transported once they go into the lymph, into the liver, and are they packaged into the lipoproteins like LDL and then transported to the body?
This is a very interesting question, and not all answers are in. To the extent that I know, Doug, I mean, you're asking something very nutritional, biochemical. Not all interviewer asked me this. To the extent that I know is this, that as far as crossing over the GI tract, we will begin with that first. They seem to be no preferential advantage one to the other. They will just passively diffuse across. Once across the GI tract, it's about to spill into the chylomicron, to the lymph thing, as you indicated. Then tocopherol has one up on the tocotrienol because there's a protein called ATTP, alpha tocopherol transport protein. Now, that sounds like a big word. I can simplify it. It simply means that certain molecules have a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. Now, not all molecules have that. In fact, most molecules have to go to passive diffusion, an engineering term, a difference in concentration, so they diffuse across. But certain molecules, because they're so important to the mammalian system, we have to have a protein to chaperone them across. And alpha tocopherol is one of them. Retinol, vitamin A is one of them. Otherwise, it's naive to, when we take retinol, for example, or vitamin D, for example, vitamin A first, it automatically will go to the retina of the eye. It can't be. It will go to every part of the body, but we have a retinol-bound protein. It will ensure that it goes to retina. Well, same thing with alpha tocopherol. It will ensure that it's packaged, eventually go into the liver, package into the LDL, and then go into the system and then deposit into the cell. Because it's so well conserved with alpha tocopherol, that is the argument I have. Taking 400 milligram or 1,000 milligram, it just OD on alpha tocopherol because it's so well conserved already. So I think that in that instance, the normal RDA, which is about 10 to 15 milligram, would be just fine, which you can get from your diet. Tocotrienol is a different story. It doesn't have a transport protein. And in fact, when after it goes through, it actually blocks the tocotrienol from enter into the system. Fortunately, because it doesn't have a transport protein, when the tocotrienol get into the lymph, the tocotrienol actually quickly deposited into many organs. Once it get it missed the organ deposition, it goes to the liver and it get metabolized, because preferentially tocopherol is preserved to be shipped out again to the LDL, but not so the tocotrienol is metabolized. So it's good and bad. If it is metabolized, if it got to the liver, deposited from the lymph to the organ, if it didn't get to the liver, that is good and bad. And the other thing that is bad, if you take too much tocotrienol and it's not needed, it's metabolized and excreted off, just like vitamin D, because it's a lipid-soluble material. But with alpha tocopherol, there remain a big question. When people take 1 gram of alpha tocopherol, they are not easily excreted because they have this ATTP that ensure its conservation into the body, which is why when we're done with this talk, the Google for yourself is mind-opening. Then you should interview other people on this. When people take a lot of alpha tocopherol, what happens to them? I know time doesn't permit this. I'll send you all the published study. I can guarantee you will be shocked and stunned. about the huge amount of alpha-tocopherol and its toxic effect on people. Just send me an email. I'll send you all the published study. Nobody talks about this.
I know what scared a lot of people in my profession was in the 2005 study, the big meta-analysis looking at high-dose vitamin E, which means, of course, alpha-tocopherol defined as greater than 400 international units, and looking at mortality, all-cause mortality. And that's what really kind of raised the flag. At least for me, that's where people started getting concerned about vitamin E. So too much alpha-tocopherol is not good, is the bottom line. It displaces the tocotrienols, which we know are superior in terms of their antioxidant abilities. And the RDA, 10 to 15 milligrams, abundantly found in nuts and seeds and that kind of thing. Do I even want to ask about gamma-tocopherol? Because one of the concerns about alpha-tocopherol is it displaces gamma, and gamma has a role in health. And then so some manufacturers say you need at least twice as much gamma so it won't be displaced by the alpha. But does that just muddy the whole conversation? We shouldn't even be worrying about the tocopherols, right?
The gamma tocopherol have a special place, can do more than alpha tocopherol. And for the same reason, if you have the same amount of alpha tocopherol and gamma tocopherol, the alpha tocopherol also interferes with the absorption of gamma tocopherol. For the same reason, the alpha-tocopherol interferes with absorption of tocotrienol. That gamma-tocopherol being interfered by alpha-tocopherol was published in the late 1980s, but people are not listening. No. They only wanted to do the marketing pitch that is a full-spectrum vitamin E. Full-spectrum polyphenols are good. I know times are short. I don't have a... The other thing that interferes is this. Everybody know about beta-carotene, because people challenge me all the time, which is fine. You know, if I'm wrong, I can admit that. Beta-carotene is the first known carotenoid because it converts to vitamin A, retinol, good for the eye, all that, 100%. And then in the last 20 years, we know that the lutein is important, astaxanthin is important, lycopene is important, they're also carotenoid. Do you notice if people mix a full-spectrum carotenoid, beta-carotene because of vitamin A, lutein, macular degeneration, and like that, beta-carotene would interfere with the absorption of other carotenoids. Why? Because beta-carotene have a transport protein of vitamin A. See, I gave you a classic example. So when you interview other people, you can expect that 90% of the time, there are no antagonism. But if you get on something that is an antagonism, you will bless many of your listeners' heart. Because if it's a 10% that is no good, then your listener, your hearer need to know about that. And tocopherol interfering with tocotrienol, beta-carotene with lutein are two classic examples I know.
Okay, so you've convinced me. I'm just fighting the evidence because I've taken vitamin E in the past and I'm having some cognitive dissonance and I have to kind of admit that I was wrong. So you've convinced me that tocotrienol is all the way to go. And as much as I like talking about the science, in the last little bit, I guess we can talk about some of the things that I think the audience will really find exciting, because biochemistry is fine, but let's put our money where our mouth is. So there's really good research looking at tocotrienols, talking about cell degradation. It can be the root cause of many chronic diseases. So how does a natto tocotrienols help to protect and repair our cells? We kind of talked about that, but is there two broad categories of action, like antioxidant and anti-inflammatory?
Yeah, both. At the root level, it has to protect the integrity of the cell wall. And then, of course, if the fat gets oxidized, then inflammation would happen like this. And even that is still at the molecular level. But, you know, in the interest of time, why don't I say it this way? Before we get into clinical studies, we probably spent about 15, almost 20 years, a little bit too long, on many cell line and animal studies. So also in the interest of time, I will just summarize in big sweep for you. We systematically saw whenever we tested tocotrienol against chronic condition, they work. And they work remarkably well compared to tocopherol. So just catch the phrase chronic condition. So now the audience is going to find out, Dr. Tan, what chronic condition? I'm going to tell you something.
Good.
We look at lipidemia. We look at fatty liver disease. We look at animal with metabolic syndrome, give them high fat, high carb diet. And of course, the big C word, cancer. these are chronic conditions. Yes, hands down, they are juvenile cancer, like brain cancer and leukemia, I understand. But I wanted to say, but most cancer are adult onset. So because of this, it is very expensive, easy to say, but very expensive and very time consuming to do it. So we have mobilized every amount of money that we have made to put on clinical trial, because I believe, as you are, if I'm on the other end as a consumer, show me the beef. Let me show me the clinicals that I did. I spent the last 10 years doing it. And what clinical trials we put our energy on? Fatty liver diseases, cancer, and also with problems with women growing old, which would be osteopenia before they get to osteoporosis when the estrogen drop. And right now we are studying obesity. 2 weeks ago, New England Journal of Medicine published. That so shocked me. We already have started the study on obesity because obesity is a serious problem. But they say that in 10 years, I'm still thinking about 25 to 40% of people are overweight and obese. The New England Journal of Medicine said that in 10 years from now, about one in two Americans, I don't know how to put my head around this, one in two Americans will be obese. So I just thought that is very serious. So we decided to study on obesity. But let me tell you the three groups of study we did on a clinical trial. Okay. We did clinical trials on stage four cancer, on a cancer one first. We did on ovarian cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer, and colon cancer. Altogether, about six studies. Some of them we repeat and make the study bigger. Of them all, the ovarian cancer is published. Next year, we will hear about the breast cancer and the colon cancer. So right now, I can only tell you the ovarian cancer. But at least if I will be on the other side listening on this, well, if Dr. Tan decide to put energy on this other cancer study, that is something. But I can only tell you what the ovarian cancer, because they're published. The five is a fifth cancer killer. The 5-year survival rate is 50%. So odds is not good. In fact, the only odds that is worse than this is pancreatic cancer, which is really bad, you know? So on this, they are taking the standard of care, which is Avastin, anti-angiogenic drug to prevent the blood vessel from feeding the tumor, almost sci-fi. That group there, compared to a group that have Avastin and the tocotrienol, 20, 30, 100 times cheaper. Can you imagine this? This is almost 100 times cheaper like this compared to Avastin as a drug. And Avastin is toxic like that. But still, it does give the woman 4 to 6 months of life longer. Hey, if there's a death sentence on me, 4 to 6 months, I'll take it. So when you're given tocotrienol, 300 milligrams, 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner. Very simple. The study is finished and published. About 60% of them still surviving at 12 months. And the one taking Avastin 6 months, it was no more. And then even at 24 months, 2 years after, 25% still surviving. Now, I don't know what you think. If I were to be a cancer survivor, I consider, hey, anything that can buy me 6 to 12 months, I'll take it. So that, remember, they are conducted for stage four cancer patients where the options are not good. There are not a lot of available options. So that's that one.
So just to clarify for the audience, so this is stage four ovarian cancer. It's end stage. Prognosis is poor. And then the tocotrienols with the standard care, which is a medication, saw a significant prolonged life. So up to 2 years and for 25%. So that's pretty astounding.
That is, and that study is done in Denmark, University of Southern Denmark. And thanks to the Danish government, they are funding the study. We have to provide the medicine for them. They're funding the study. So this is, I'm just grateful, you know, not everything is because of me. If they say no and didn't put in the money, how would I have done the study? I don't have the means. Mm-hmm. These kind of studies are exceedingly difficult to do, not to mention extreme cost to do so. So if any of your listeners know that there are Canadian enterprises or Canadian government or something who's willing to do a trial, we will consider providing the medicine, because I'm all in. to make sure that people can benefit from the tocotrienol, you know, whether it is working or not working. I want to know, as you do.
Right. No, that's good to know. So one question that a lot of people might be interested in, because we see it so much, is when we talk about dyslipidemia, we talk about issues with triglycerides, cholesterol, insulin resistance, diabetes. So you mentioned that tocotrienols benefit metabolic disease, but also fatty liver disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So do you have published studies on those that you can highlight?
Yes, both
briefly?
Of them. Okay. Yes, let me talk about it. I'm very excited about this. Not that any less excited about cancer. Cancer, we have 12 million people with cancer survivor in the US. But with fatty liver disease, it's silent disease. There's no signaling or anything. And it's about 80 million American. I assume Canada will be comparable to us. Mm-hmm. That's very high percentage, about 25%. Metabolic syndrome, it's a subset of people with lipidemia, and it's a subset of people with fatty liver disease, that they are all somewhat connected. We decided to go after the fatty liver because of the humongous number of people with this. So we have a 3-month published study, and as of 2 weeks ago, we have a 6-month study. If you email us, I'll be glad to send you those studies. It's a small study, but we control the study really well. It's double-blind and placebo-controlled. And the 3-month and the 6-month study are mutually exclusive. They are not 3 months and you follow to 6. The 3-month study finished, published. And then you another group, a 6-month study finished and published. So they are mutually exclusive. So we give them 600 milligrams, 300 milligrams with one meal and 300 milligrams with the other meal. So we do not have a dose-dependent, people are familiar with that. Instead, we have a time-dependent. So the time-dependent thing is very clear. The BMI dropped 5% at 3 months, and then at 6 months, it dropped 8%. So on the weight side, we did not expect to have weight loss. But at 3 months, they lost 10 pounds, and then at 6 months, 15 pounds. There is a dose-dependent. Triglyceride. Very important on people with metabolic syndrome, 10%, 13%, meaning 3 months and 6 months. FLI, fatty liver index. They use ultrasound on the liver, 11% drop, 15% drop. This is really dramatic. I'm just giving you the gist. I'm happy to send you all of those studies. Oxidized fat, they are seriously oxidized in the body, 14% reduction oxidation, 19%. And then inflammation, C-reactive protein, 18% drop and 21% drop. All of these are referring to 3 months and 6 months. And then so convinced with this, and then I pass it back to you, so convinced we were on this, we decided that, okay, fatty liver disease is not going to vanish overnight to 3 to 6 months. So we decided to put all our resources in. I approve our company to do it. Let's do a 12-month study. So now a 12-month study is ongoing. With this, we should be able to apply to Health Canada as well as in the US. Health Canada already approved the use of tocotrienol. We are applying to Health Canada to ask for permission, submitting the study to them. We are above board, man. We submit the study to them and say, please allow us to have a structure function claim in Canada for people with NAFLD. If they say yes, Canada would be the first country in the world to do this. We're going to do this in the next few months, COVID permitting.
Yeah, well, Health Canada can be hot or cold. They can be sometimes really a barrier to things, and then sometimes they can be innovators. So what people don't appreciate is these results, if this was a medication, this would be a blockbuster, and somebody would be making billions of dollars. Is that a fair statement? And then this is something like an over-the-counter, perfectly safe, naturally derived antioxidant to get these effects is astounding.
Yeah, right now, there are no medication to address NAFLD, fatty liver, except for lifestyle changes, meaning to exercise to lose weight and a low-fat, low-carb diet. I don't have a curve with it. Because we did placebo control study, even the author didn't do that. I grabbed it out from his result. You can see it, okay? 0.3 month, 6 months. So on the placebo control, they're not taking any tocotrienol. It go like this, 3 months, 6 months, so there is drop in weight, and at 6 months, no drop flat. So lifestyle changes help to 3 months, but not to 6 months. And then the same curve, zero, with exercise and lifestyle, with total trying to drop like this, steep curve. 6 months, it dropped even more dramatic. So that means that where lifestyle change, tocotrienol continue to have a positive impact to mitigate the severity on the liver conditions.
So probably around some inflammation, insulin sensitivity, something to that effect. I'm assuming. So when we think about anti-aging, that's another focus of my practice. And we talk about, I mean, just the things that we face as we get older. So is there other things that, if we just have 5 or 10 minutes left, if there's a few other things that tocotrienols benefit, skin, eye, brain, arthritis, broadly speaking?
We were thinking to do a study with rheumatoid arthritis, which is very overt. We haven't figure out how to go about doing that. In animal study, we have done rheumatoid arthritis, other people have published, and osteoarthritis, and it worked. So we decided that on the inflammation, because we checked so many people, lipidemia, and then the inflammation would drop. So in Texas, we decided to do postmenopausal women with obesity. So the study is ongoing. We gave people 300 milligrams over 6 months. So they're still recruiting people, and the COVID make it difficult, of course, to do this. And this one, the IRB, meaning the Institutional Review Board, allows. So I'm actually very grateful that people, you know, there's one thing to agree to the study. Another thing, do you have money to pay for the study? These are people you're talking about, you know, and the IRB allowed to have to have adipose biopsy. So you have to poke the needle to get a small amount of fat. So we are going to study cytokine, inflammatory cytokine of live fat cells, so we can get to the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. Remember, at the end of the day, Doug, this is a nutritional supplement. If it really works, this is the last thing. With this, I will lay down the gauntlet. Other people are going to do this. I've done my duty today. I did it. You know, I'm not rich, but I'm able to bring food on the table, and I'm bearing this thing. Other people will carry the thing. So there may be something very special about this molecule, and it originally came from a vitamin E molecule. I know it's towards the end now. I have studied and read many molecules that are vitamin, the superhero of chemical, like that vitamin. Very few of them have this, and very few people know. I'm really sad that not more people know. You don't have to buy from me. Other people sell this, but you should at least focus on this lesser known vitamin E called tocotrienol. And you can download my book. I did it as a label of love. If you just put berrytan.com and then said that you come to Doug Cook's podcast, you can download the book free. I put all the references there. Everything I say, I cite it.
Yeah, no, it's a great book. I've read it. It's called The Truth About Vitamin E, The Secret to Thriving with a Tocotrienol. So the code, if you go to berrytan.com, is the name of the podcast, Dietitian Rehab, spelt with a T. And then just the last question or two, very briefly, people are dying to know, I'm in good health. How much should I take? And then if someone has a mild condition or advanced condition, what kind of recommendations based on research? This is not just willy-nilly. This is evidence-based.
Yes. I would say based on research, a healthy person to protect their cell wall, because we have so many cells in our body, probably 100 to 200 milligrams per day. If they have a mild chronic condition or a family history of blah, 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 chronic condition type, then higher, 300 to 400 milligrams. Of course, if they have an advanced chronic condition, then 450 to 600. We see no reason higher than 600, even though, remember, the 900 milligram on the cancer study, there was stage 4 cancer trial. To give you
stage 4,
you know how serious that would be.
Got it.
I know you didn't ask the last question. I know that this is probably something prophetic. You can interview me in a future time. We are now working on a compound nobody in the world has. And then it is still R&D stage. It's a compound called, you can Google and read yourself, it's called geraniol, geranol. I'll spell it out to you. G-E-R-A-N-Y-L as an adjective, and then there's G-E-R-A-N-I-O-L. And I just acronize it to GG. This compound our human body makes, so it's endogenous. Our human body makes them. You can, it is 100% underappreciated. This compound is used by your human body to synthesize vitamin K2, which is the MK4, not the popularly known MK7. Can you know that? So people are pushing the MK7.
Yep.
Actually, your body makes MK4. You know who is the Canadian? See, I want to give you back the credit. The Canadian scientist who is doing this is at McGill University. His name is Mama. You put McGill University scientist who is doing this, that person is doing it. It's a he, but I don't know him personally. Then the second thing is GG is required besides the synthesis of MK4, is required for the synthesis of CoQ10. Everybody knows CoQ10 ATP conversion. So have me on sometime to talk about GG, for if not for anything else, for these two. And so many people take statin. I'll give you a last one before I sign off. They take statin and we know that it drops CoQ10, correct. But supplementing CoQ10 does not reverse myopathy. Supplementing GG 100% reverse myopathy.
Yeah, we need to support endogenous production. The supplemental CoQ10 is notoriously poorly absorbed. So this is experimental at this point, right? Because tocotrienols can be purchased in 100 to 300 milligram amounts. So people can easily buy that for the amounts that you outlined. But the GG is still at a research level. They're not selling that as a supplement.
The GG, you can get it. Only one company does it. It's called Designs, plural, for Health. Designs for Health. And Design for Health, tocotrienol is approved, and you can buy Design for Health product in Canada. The Design for Health is a station in British Columbia, Toronto, and places like that.
Yeah, that's who I use and I'm familiar with. So that is almost an hour of the most amazing information that will be mind-boggling, I would say, to 99.99% of listeners, because it's brand new and it's a fight that people need to take up and to spread the word, almost like a in an evangelical manner, because this is so important. So I know you're super busy and I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. I would love to talk again. Who knows, in the future, the GG stuff would be really fascinating. So any parting words before we sign off?
Other than we all need to keep safe and healthy, so like that. But I appreciate the time you allow. So check out for yourself the word tocotrienol and geraniol, and then hopefully you may find other nuggets that we read all the same thing, you know, and then we may find different things. But if you know of somebody who's doing research on tocotrienol and GG, send me an email.
Okay.
I would love to connect with them. Thank you so much, and blessing and being healthy.
And one last thing, I would gladly take some of the research you talked about and I'll just embed it on my website where this podcast details and player will be found for anyone who's interested.
Okay. I will send them to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Okay. Blessings.
Hit subscribe and get ready to expand your nutritional world, your perspective, and gain confidence in a way that you didn't know you could. And be sure to check out my website, DougCookRD.com.